switch. Throw it, I say! Throw it!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Slice! Slice, you hear me? Give my creation! Slice!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well now, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show, coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida, Naples, Fort Myers area. I hope you're having a good day. Kind of an unusual day here today, a bit cloudy. Probably around 80 degrees or so. We had a delightfully cool day on Sunday, I believe it was. We had a low of around 50 and a high in the day of about a 78, 79. It's been unseasonably warm here in the 90s all last week, and so we're happy to have a break in the weather where we get some of that some of those cool mornings. Gosh, I love those cool mornings. How you been? Huh? I've been all right, I guess. I hope everything's all well with you and your family and your loved ones and all. It's been a while since we've been together. I've gotten many emails from fans of the program asking me why we haven't been on. And let me just pretty much sum it up in one word. Funding. That will do. Funding. If we have the funding, we can be here. In fact, the only reason the show is on today is we got some help with some funding from Terry. Thank you very much. And Mara as well. Thank you. So anyway, that's the short answer. And I'm glad to be back with you all today. We got so much to talk about. So much has happened since the last time we were together. My goodness, poor Rush Limbaugh tried to buy himself a football team and was spurned by the people with brains in the NFL. And now it's a conspiracy against Rush. Yes, a massive conspiracy by the NFL. It seems the NFL overnight, a group that Rush claims to have loved and admired for so long, they've all of a sudden turned into Obama bots. Yes, Obama kept Rush Limbaugh from buying the St. Louis Cardinals. You know what? I think this actually really hurt him, personally. I mean, I think in his heart, I think he's hurt. And I couldn't be happier about that. I hate to see people hurt, but not a scoundrel like him. And if he's suffering pain over it, all well and good. That's a good thing. Always a good thing. You know how I feel about him. So anyway, I was searching through the net today, and I found an interesting story that the Big Brother winner, what was it, a year ago, 2 years ago? His name is Adam Jasinski of Delray Beach, Florida. He's been charged with an attempt to sell 2,000 pills in Massachusetts. Yes, he's selling thousands. He took his $500,000 from the show, and he's a a real entrepreneur, and he took his $500,000 and he invested in oxycodone pills. And he's been up and down the East Coast selling them. Now, I know that many of you probably know that Delray Beach, Florida, is not all that far from a home of a certain, well, a certain talk show host that recently tried to buy a football team. I wonder, and Rush has been sounding pretty crazy lately, and so I wonder if this Adam Jasinski, I wonder if he's made a trip or two down to see Rush. Because Rush loves him some Oxycontin, you know. All he does. Got it, he was eating it by the handful. He got so much of it, I guess it kind of ruined his ears, and now he has to wear those cochlear implants. What a shame. What a pity. 866-546-5254, if you'd like to join us here on the program today. I'll ask you to hold off on phone calls here for a little while. Had a few things I wanted to talk about. I do want to mention that beware in Washington, D.C. Just beware, all of you folks, because Bob Kincaid and Guy James are about to descend upon Washington, D.C. once again. We're going to go to the Building Making in America Economy Conference agenda. It's put on by the Institute for America's Future, and they have invited us to come to Washington and stream the entire conference, the entire day from 9:30 a.m. till about 3:30 in the afternoon, and that'll take place a week from Thursday. So beware, Bob and I will be on the prowl in Washington, D.C. again, and we always cause a stir when we go there. We try to anyway. I don't know whether we'll get near, well, yes, I do, I would be lying. The Fogo de Chão, the famous beef, as Bob and I call it, that meat place. I imagine we'll have to take a trip over there. They see Bob and I coming again, they'll probably scream in horror for what we did to them the last time. We did our share, we did. Oh, healthcare, healthcare, healthcare. How do you feel about the healthcare situation that's going on right now? I know we've talked about it for how many months now? A good long time, to be sure. And I don't feel we've made any progress on it at all since we started. I know many of you don't either. And I'm really, I thought long and hard about what to talk about on the show today, and I thought, you know, I was going to write a monologue or something, and I thought, well, no, I don't want to do that. I don't like to do that in the first place. And secondly, I just wasn't in the mood. And I find myself, and I'm sure a lot of you are in the same boat as I am right now. We had a tough election last fall. We had a tough election year. We worked hard to, we tried our best to get the message out and all that, and I'm at some sort of a crossroad right now, and I'm really not sure where to turn. And I've heard from some of you, and I know some of you feel the same way that I do, but for the first time in my adult life, I'm having doubts about whether or not this nation is going to survive. And I'm serious about this. I really am. I'm not just talking off the top of my head. I've thought about it long and hard. I'm really concerned that the United States of America may never be as good as it once was. Certainly at the rate we're going, I'm beginning to think, as they often say, our best days are behind us. I know the optimists and the politicians say, oh, our greatest days are ahead. Well, I doubt that. I remember at the convention, and I remember at the inauguration, and I remember many times our president saying our best days are ahead. I have my doubts. I do. Not that the same situation hasn't befallen any great society that took place, the Egyptians, the Greeks, the Romans, the British Empire. They all reached a zenith, they all reached a peak, and then gradually slid downhill for one reason or another. Usually for the same reason that we're sliding. And it's hard to explain. And before anyone starts with the, and I know I'll hear it, probably getting an email already right now. Oh, he's not patriotic and all that kind of talk. Allow me to explain myself. And I really have given this a lot of thought. I don't know how to analogize it, really, but did you ever have a friend? I'll try. A friend, did you ever have a loved one, maybe a relative that you love so, very much, and then they did something to cast shame upon themselves and the family and their friends? You still love them, but you're not proud of what they've done, and you no longer feel that they're as good as you thought them to be. Did you ever experience that? Or do you know somebody that has? Well, that's how I feel about their country right now. I still love her. I love her very much. But I'm downright ashamed of what she's becoming. And ashamed is the proper word. And I can just hear the righties going nuts as I say that. I am ashamed of some of her recent past deeds. And I'm ashamed of how she's acting at the moment. And I'm particularly ashamed of the hatred and division and dissension that our country is currently tolerating. We have, again, become a nation divided, I guess, over the last, 139 and 148 years. I guess we haven't learned a thing since the start of the Civil War. We're divided over so many issues this time, not just one. And we're so divided that we might have reached a tipping point. And I'm serious about this. I think we might have reached a tipping point beyond which there'll be no turning back to civility or any type of cohesion as a nation. We are no longer united. Everywhere I turn, I see signs that we're growing further and further apart. And we've got race and religion, political ideology, ethics, morality, you name it, and we're splitting apart. And I see it every single day. And I suppose it starts at the top. I doubt many citizens today think many of our politicians are honest. I know I don't. And I doubt many people think they're serving because they've got the best interests of our country in mind, and I certainly don't believe that most of them do. You've heard me say on this program many times that quite the contrary. I'm convinced that 99% of our elected officials are in the pockets of the special interest, the financial interest, the investment people, the insurance people, the real estate people. I am. I'm convinced that 99% of our elected officials are in the pockets of the special interest groups. And let's face it, those groups pour millions and millions of dollars into the campaigns of politicians in order to own them and obtain their votes for whatever is necessary for the good of the firms given the money. In other words, they're buying our politicians. Now, this isn't anything new. Politicians have been bought and paid for probably since the first politician was elected. Under the table money. Now it's pretty much on top of the table money. They take it on top of the table. They say, yes, I took money from the financial institutions, the banks, and yes, I took money from the insurance companies, but I didn't do them any favors. No, no. They give me that money, and they hope that I'll just listen to them. That's all. Can you imagine being the CEO of a company and saying, a big insurance company, for example. You're the CEO of a big insurance company, and you call down to the financial officer's office and say, hey, make out a check to that Max Baucus, for example. Make out a check to Max Baucus for, you know, whatever the max is that we can give him. Give it to the party so it's funneled to Max. So give him $100,000, okay? Give him whatever we can give him. And the financial officers will, what for? Well, you know very well what for. We want him to fight against this health care reform. And by the way, find me a list, the CEO says, find me a list of everybody else that we've ever given money to for whatever reason, and let's start pumping the money into them, because we know that ultimately they will go along with our desires. Oh, yes, it's fine, and we expect them to get up in front of the public and say, yes, I took money from the insurance companies, but not for what you think, folks. No, I just took it because they want me to listen to their side, and they want to help get me elected because they think I represent some of the things that they want, and that's why they gave me the money. But certainly, I'm not playing for pay here. Certainly not. Because you folks, you individual voters, you're the ones that really mean the world and all to me, not the big companies. No. So that's what happens, and the big CEOs don't expect anything back for their money, now do they? Can you even imagine the board of directors of a big company electing a new CEO, and he tells them, yes, we will give money to this politician or that politician, but we won't expect anything from them. We won't try to get anything from them. Now, will we? No, certainly not. Yeah, pinch me, that's a cartoon. That's something that'll never happen. Folks, they are, and I'm not the first to tell you this. I'm just the one telling you this right now. These companies, the corporate America, is buying and paying for our politicians. And I know some of you are sitting there today saying, not my politician, not my representative. That's the problem. Take a look. I would bet you a dollar to a donut there aren't a half a dozen in all of the Congress that haven't taken money and cast a vote from someone they've taken the money for because they got the money. Politicians. So, they do give money, and they give it to get. They want to get whatever they can for their firms. You know, they talked about the financial companies, the banks, the investment houses, the hedge funds, the insurance companies, AIG, and others, real estate firms, all of them. They absolutely, and I can't emphasize this enough. A lot of you think people are kidding when they say this. They do absolutely control our politicians. They have bought and paid for them, almost every one. You gotta be in Washington sometime, and you gotta go, and I know some of you have been, and you go to your senator's office, you go to your representative's office, and see the lobbyists sitting there with their briefcases. In their suits. Waiting to get an appointment to see Senator so-and-so, Representative so-and-so. There are thousands of lobbyists that descend upon the House and Senate office buildings. And when they leave, they have an understanding. A wink and a nod that I'll pad your pocket and you do my bidding. And once you're there and once you see all this, you understand it, the lure and the power and the prestige of holding office in the House or the Senate is, from what I can see, absolutely irresistible. You can see it when you're there. You can feel it. The sense of power that these people have is absolutely palpable when you're in their presence. I am important. I will fight for you. I love that one. I'll fight for you. I represent the will of the people. I am your voice in Washington, and on and blah, 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 blah. It's all a grand illusion. They're people that, for the most part, have a unbelievably high opinion of themselves and who are, for the most part, not one bit more intelligent than the people walking the streets. They may have been born with a silver spoon in their mouth, or maybe they've inherited a name which has helped propel them into office, but very few of them get to Washington, D.C., and then do the bidding of the people they supposedly represent. If you start investigating how many of these politicians in the House and the Senate have got there because of money, because of their name, well, that will tell the whole story. And time after time, they convince us that there's going to be change. We're going to change. This good old boy network in Washington, D.C. is going to change. Yes, it is. You elect me, and when I get there, I'll help change it. You know, when they get to Washington, they first and foremost represent themselves so that they can get reelected and hang on to their power and their prestige as a member of the Congress of the United States of America. And when they vote on a bill, number one in their minds, they're thinking of how it affects their reelection and their standing with the electorate. Not have I done the right thing for the United States. Not have I done the right thing for my people. Not have I adequately represented the constituency back home that put me in office. Not have I carried out the will of the people, the promises that I made to everybody that pulled the lever for me. But how can I keep my office? And the reason I'm at this crossroads I was talking about is, and I mean it just the way it sounds, the way it comes out of my mouth, I am ashamed of the low intelligence or the inability to use one's brain the people of the United States are exhibiting right now. I had not realized until just the last few years, perhaps the last decade, just how goddamn stupid a lot of people in the United States are. Millions and millions of people that really, I wonder if they can read or not. Millions of them. I don't believe I've ever seen people accept pure horseshit as truth more than they are right now. I mean, it's true, you've got the likes of the drug junkie king, Rush Limbaugh. He's been snowing people for years, but now there are so many more bullshit propagandists for the neocons than ever before. And I'm just totally ashamed that people in this country can sit and listen to a guy like Glenn Beck, another drug junkie, another guy that has admittedly abused substances almost all of his life, a crazy son of a bitch if I've ever seen one, and millions of people listen to this guy and believe his shtick. How is it possible that someone can watch him and listen to him and not know that he's a total fake and a propaganda artist and that he's half nuts? How can you see him cry crocodile tears day after day, pretending he loves this country, while he spews rivers of crap? And how could you see all that and believe any of it? I saw a cut from one of his shows the other night, and, you know, I came to the conclusion that anyone believing in Glenn Beck and what he says, anything he says, must also, by default, be a WWF wrestling fan and think that it's totally legit. I'm really ashamed of the United States of America because of this Beck phenomenon going on right now. I know it doesn't affect everybody, but it's affecting millions of people, and the thought that millions of my fellow countrymen are buying this makes me ashamed. It makes me wonder what I'm dealing with here. And I'm not looking down upon people. I'm not coming to you with this from some point of condescension. I am not. I am disappointed that this country isn't better than that. This country is now showing me something that I haven't seen to this extreme before. I've always known that there are puppets willing to go along with any charlatan that comes down the road. All you got to do is go watch some of these evangelists talk and see that they've got, you know, throngs of people that'll follow them anywhere. And there's a few people that'll do that in the country. But percentage-wise, we're now dealing with a lot of people. You go over and look at Fox, and you understand, if they are, in fact, and I believe they are, the number one cable network, that's got to frighten the hell out of you. It's got to frighten you. Knowing that that percentage of people in this country are that goddamn stupid and that gullible. And you know that's happened before. That has happened before, not in this country necessarily. Oh, we had Father Coughlin back in the 30s, the 20s, 30s. But it's happened in Central Europe, where a country became mesmerized by someone that could get up and spew bullshit really, really well and get surround himself with other people that could spew the bullshit very, very well. Next thing you know, they had an army. Next thing you know, they were clubbing good citizens. Next thing you know, you didn't dare speak out against them. And that's happened in other countries as well. And I'm afraid that Americans are becoming just that gullible and just that stupid. And it's not just that Beck and Limbaugh and Hannity and who else? Levin and Ingram, and I could give you a whole big long list, O'Reilly. It's not that those people and the rest of them are crazy money-grubbing neocons who will say anything to make a buck. I would be saying the same thing if it were lefties who acted the same way. I'm ashamed that the American public is stupid and gullible enough to swallow anything and everything they say and believe it to be the absolute truth. Remember, this is the same stupid, gullible American public who's allowing the politicians to pull the wool over their eyes on important things like the wars and health care, while the people sit on their lazy asses and let it happen. Did you ever think the United States of America would descend into this kind of a mess? That we'd be this apathetic, that we'd be this foolish, this gullible, this stupid? Did you ever think, were you brought up to think, that America could be filled with people like that? I know I didn't. I know I had better examples than that when I was growing up. There are so many things to be ashamed of right now. So many things. And I'll talk a little bit more about it when we come back. I'm going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
I want to be just like my president. I want to make more money than I can spend. I want to build more bombs than I can spend. Somewhere I can even spell the name of. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want a big, big Mac in double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across the sky. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century.
Insuricor is here to thank you for defeating health care reform and thus defeating socialism. That's why this week we're offering 5% off a basic health care plan. Sign up now. We also want to thank you for not stopping in health care and defeating other socialist programs that America has taxed your dollars to fund. In exchange for returning these socialist programs to the private sector, we're offering deals left and right. Get 10% off our basic waste management coverage. $5 co-payments on regular bags of trash. $10 co-payments on recycling. These prices can't be beat. Can't afford those $20,000 a year private schools? Sign up now for our basic public education coverage. Where else can you get public education at a co-payment of $999 a month? Only at Insuricor. Feeling unsafe in your home or on the streets? Sign up for our basic law enforcement coverage. Our system can't be beat. When a crime has been committed against you, simply fill out a claim at the scene and hand it to the police when they show up. With Insuricor, you'll have to wait only 25 minutes to receive a ruling on your claim and send the police after the perpetrator. That's 5 minutes faster than our average competitors wait. Remember, that extra 5 minutes will likely decide whether the police catch that mugger. And don't be caught without our basic fire department coverage.
Help! My house is burning down!
Sorry, ma'am. The fire department coverage policy doesn't cover burning houses.
Are you kidding? I specifically requested burning house coverage. I've been needing it for years. Why is it canceled now?
Probably because your house is burning down. Here's the bill for calling us out here. Have a nice day.
Uh-oh, sounds like she was using one of our competitors. She should have signed up with Insuricor. So call now. Sign up for one or more of our plans and celebrate the defeat of socialism. Remember, it's always best to entrust programs that serve the public good to unregulated, profit-driven mega corporations. Insuricor.
Welcome back to the Guy James Show, this Wednesday, October 20th, 2009. Glad to have all of you along in Hong Kong with us this afternoon. Like I mentioned earlier, I think we'll hold off on phone calls for a while. I'm kind of clearing my chest today, getting things off my chest that have been building up for a while. And I want to remind everybody once again, send all the emails and so forth as to why we have not been on for a while. In a word, funding, F-U-N-D-I-N-G. Keep it in mind. And thanks to Terry, and thanks to Maura and others as well. We'll mention the names a little later. I've been talking about things that worry me about the country right now, things that I'm ashamed of. And I'm doubly ashamed right now that a small group of crazy terrorists whose main mode of transportation is horses are leading the mightiest nation on earth around by the nose while striking fear into the hearts of our citizens, and that fear is being used by politicians, mostly Republicans, to feed the voracious appetite of our military-industrial complex while the politicians fatten their own wallets from the deaths of our precious sons and daughters. The very fact that a lobbyist from Martin Marietta or Halliburton or Boeing or many others, countless others, the fact that them and their friends can get a face-to-face appointment with yours or my senator while you and I cannot is a scandal of epic proportions. But that's the way they've always done things, guys. That's the way it's always been. Doesn't make it right, does it? Politicians are always telling us that the founders would do this. The Republicans are so fond of telling us, the founders would do this. The founders would do that. They say that in order to bolster their argument, whatever their argument may be. And well, I believe I can say with absolute confidence that if the founders knew of the situation with the lobbyists right now and our elected officials, they would be dumbfounded and they'd be horrified and they'd want to put something else in the Constitution to keep it from happening again. I know I am ashamed and dumbfounded and horrified over it, and you should be as well. But again, what are we doing about it? We ought to be marching in the streets of Washington, D.C. by the hundreds of thousands every single day until we put a stop to the huge corporations controlling our lives and the destiny of this once great nation. And yes, I say once great because if the American public doesn't believe we're on a collision course with catastrophe, then they're even dumber than I thought. Every day, I see more and more evidence that the wealthy class in this nation is further enriching themselves at the expense of everyone who's less fortunate than them. You see it every single day, more and more and more of it. The story's coming out now about the bonuses on Wall Street. They talk about pornography. I have never seen anything more obscene than what's coming out of Wall Street right now regarding these bonuses. And what is the government doing about it? Nothing. Nothing. Well, they said they were going to. Yeah, they said they were going to do something about it, but, you know, there's that money coming from Wall Street flowing into their reelection coffers, and they're not about to say too much. They'll make a few rumblings out in the public, make a few statements, but as far as doing anything meaningful, the answer is no, hell no. And as we all know, that's another one of these cases here where they've put the foxes in charge of the chicken house. You know, this Pazar. You know, they were gonna regulate top executive pay. The Pazar that everybody calls him, Ken Feinberg. He was the White House pick to oversee pay at the nation's biggest bailed out firms. Last week he convinced, and I just thought the story was absolutely laughable. Last week he convinced the soon-to-retire Bank of America CEO, Ken Lewis, to give up his $1.5 million 2009 salary. Well, isn't that nice? And how magnanimous of Mr. Lewis to give, imagine that, to give up his salary for 2009 of $1.5 million. And you read that and you go, God, these people are listening. This is great. But why did Lewis agree to that? Because he gets to walk away at the end of the year with a retirement package worth $69.3 million. $69.3 million he gets to walk away with. But he did give up his salary of $1.5 million. Goldman Sachs, $16.7 billion sitting in its bonus pool right now for their executives and their people. $16.7 billion. Goldman Sachs last week announced a $3.19 billion profit in the third quarter in earnings. Quadruple their profit from a year ago. And they say that pool by the end of December will be up to $23 billion, enough to pay each and every Goldman Sachs employee over $700,000 if the bonus dollars were divided equally. It's incredible. Absolutely incredible. Every day I read of more and more greed by these obscenely rich bastards on Wall Street, and these record bonuses is just the frosting on the cake right now. These are executives that, for my money, robbed the United States Treasury of money that you and I placed there by paying our taxes through hard work and our due diligence. And meanwhile, the paper shufflers on Wall Street gabble, that gamble hundreds of billions of dollars of other people's money, make themselves rich beyond average people's imagination, and because of their insatiable greed, they break some large investment firms and banks. And who bails them out? Well, we do. We get the pleasure of doing that. Yes, we get to bail these people out after they've gambled all of their investors' money, and some of it our money, those of us that can afford to invest, after they lose it all by enriching themselves off of their fees and their pay structure. Who gets to bail them out? We do. We give them hundreds of billions of our dollars because they plead that they're, and you remember the term, too big to fail. And what does all of this lead to? What's been the end result right now for you and for me and for the small business people in this country? It's led to them tightening credit, hiking their fees, hiking their interest rate on their credit cards. But they've tightened credit on the little guys and the small businessmen and women of America to the point where thousands and thousands of small businesses, the backbone of America, by the way, General Motors was never the backbone of America. It was always the small businesses. So they've tightened things up to the point where thousands and thousands of small businesses have to close. You know where their customers end up going. They end up going to Walmart and the big box stores. But these little people have to close their businesses while the big boys grow even larger and pay themselves hundreds of billions of dollars in bonuses to do it. And we have, yes, millions of our own citizens who say, yes, sir. Yes, sir, that's the American way. That's pure capitalism. Let it do what it'll do. God bless America. And they allow these filthy Wall Street thieving bastards to go right on with their game of F you, America. I'm stealing money from you, whether you like it or not. And they do it with the blessings of our elected officials who refuse to do a damn thing about it because they are owned lock, stock, and barrel by these parasites who do absolutely nothing for this nation. They produce nothing. All they do is suck the blood out of the working men and women of this nation and make themselves rich. And all of this financial meltdown business over the past couple of years exposing unimaginable greed and corruption. And what have the authorities done about it? Almost nothing. They grab Bernie Madoff and throw him in prison. The numbers of that scandal impressed everybody. Bernie Madoff didn't rob you and me and average Joe American. Oh, no. He robbed the people of his own ilk. And so they throw him in prison. They think the regulators do, and they think somehow that'll placate the public. Well, I'm not fooled, neither should you be. There are hundreds of Wall Street types and bankers and investment firm executives across this nation who need to have their asses thrown in jail for what they've done to Americans. But you know, and I know, that will not happen anytime soon. You go down and you bounce a $50 check at the wrong place, and you'll end up in jail. A guy at Wall Street screws people out of $100 billion, and it's, oh, well, it was a bad decision. Damn it, we are just... so apathetic to allow this to happen right now in front of our noses and not demand that justice be done. We should demand a pound of flesh from these people instead of allowing them to pay themselves hundreds of billions of dollars in bonuses. Let me ask you something right now. How big is your bonus this year? How big is your bonus? What's it going to be? Are you going to get the obligatory turkey at Thanksgiving or Christmas? A lot of employers even cutting that out now. You've already had your hours cut. You had your pay cut. You got laid off, maybe lost your job, been fired altogether. Lost your pension plan. Maybe lost it all. Like I said, had the hours cut down to practically nothing to where you've lost your insurance. Lots of people in that boat. Now your unemployment's run out and you got actually have those sons of bitches on Capitol Hill thinking about not renewing the unemployment benefits for another term. What do you do if you've lost your job and you can't find another job and you've been out hurting, hunting and searching for a job and you can't find one? You got a couple of kids at home and you've depleted your savings and the wolf is at the door. And you got congressmen in the Congress of the United States saying, well, you know, we can't renew that unemployment thing another time. We just can't do it. We just can't afford it. Oh, we can afford to have troops on half the countries around the world. We can afford to have troops in Japan and Germany and I don't know where all. Of course, Iraq and Afghanistan as well. But we can't afford to renew the unemployment benefits for people. We've got congressmen saying that. Bastards. You are lucky if you've kept your job. I live in an area, 14.8% unemployment. In Lee County, Florida right now, 14.8. And I know there's probably areas around the country I haven't looked lately that are even more. I know that. And if you will, please hold off on the phone calls for a little while. But the rest of us are just allowing this to happen. There's no massive marches at our congressmen. There's no millions of phone calls to your representative or to your senators over this? Oh, no. But meanwhile, on Wall Street, these people are making millions of dollars, billions of dollars. And you're probably damn lucky if you're making enough money to continue to pay your skyrocketing health care premiums. The premiums that those benevolent insurance companies have kept as low as possible out of their concern for you and the welfare of the United States. Because we all know that the insurance companies and the health care industries, their first concern is the health of the American people, not massive profits. Not ordinary profits like a lot of people would like to make, but massive, obscene profits. But don't worry, because our wonderful elected officials are soon coming to the rescue with a wonderful new health care bill that's going to be so beneficial to all of us. It's going to ensure everyone in the country so that no one will have to worry about the financial implications of being sick anymore. Imagine that. Won't it be great? If you or someone in your family, you come up with a catastrophic illness of some kind and you're in the hospital in intensive care, you won't have to worry about the bill. You won't have to worry about losing your home. You won't have to worry about bankruptcy because of it, because our politicians are going to make sure that we, the richest nation in the world for the time being, are going to just take care of everybody's health and make sure that that's, yeah. It'll ensure everyone in the country so that no one will have to worry about the financial implications of ever being sick again. We won't have to worry about losing our credit because of the medical bills anymore. We won't have to file bankruptcy anymore because of the huge medical bills. It's going to be so great not to have to worry about health care anymore. going to be so great that no matter what, if you're a hard-working stiff, you go to work every day, you do, your wife does, your kids are in school, your kids are in college, that's not anything you have to worry about anymore, is that $1,000 a month for your health care. Or if you lose your job, you won't have to worry about that anymore. At least that's one thing you won't have to worry about. Yeah, right. This health care bill isn't going to amount to a hill of beans, and we should all know it. You should all expect it. I've read a lot of it. The politicians are going to pass some worthless piece of crap and tell us it's manna from heaven. And I can't wait to hear the rhetoric on this one. You'll hear it all. Oh, it's not exactly what we wanted, but it's a start. We can't afford a real public option. What's the other? Competition's going to be good for our premiums, yes. Good for whom? We can pass all of the funding bills we need for war and more war. But we really can't afford to take care of our health. We might not be as healthy as we should be. We might not stack up to many other nations' health care programs. We might have hundreds of our citizens who help pay for our bombs dying every single day because they don't have proper medical care. But by God, we can still kick any other nation's ass with our military. Yep. Get her done. Unless you think that I'm being unfair, let me go on to say, and this might make some of you angry. If it does, you know how much I care about that. There's President Obama. I worked hard to get him elected. Millions of us did. We were excited about change. We were excited that the man said he wanted to end the wars. He was going to pass a significant health care bill. He was going to be tough on these Wall Street tycoons who robbed the nation's piggy bank in broad daylight. He was going to clean it up. We would have new oversight. We would have this and we would have that. Now, I know politicians will often say anything to get elected, but I also know that Obama was by far the safest choice between the two candidates, and I am terribly disappointed in what he's done or not done so far. I didn't expect rabbits out of a hat, and I don't expect miracles, but I did expect a more cogent, hard-nosed campaign for health care. They have, the White House has been a miserable, miserable failure on this healthcare issue. The bully pulpit, they've been run over by the right-wing media. They've been run over by the Republican leadership. And I haven't heard a good argument yet come out of the White House for this healthcare program. Not one good argument yet. It's that scrambled. It's that ridiculous. I think I told you when we were in Pittsburgh a while back, when Bob and I were in Pittsburgh at the conference there, Chris Hayes, who often is on Olbermann's show, he got up in 5 minutes and explained the health care program that the White House wants, 1, 2, 3, and everybody in the room went, why the hell doesn't the White House explain it that way? That is the program, and that is what we want. And yet, I'll bet you that 75%, oh, I'll bet you more than that. I'll bet 90% of the people in the country don't have any idea what's in this health care deal coming out right now. I'll bet they don't. I haven't heard anybody say that they can explain it really well, any layman out here in the streets. The White House has failed so miserably on this that I just can't believe it. Don't get me wrong. I love this president. And I think he's got the opportunity to do a lot of things. I think he's blowing the opportunity. I think he has to have a sit-down meeting with the Democrats in the House and the Senate and tell them what's what. If he has to call them in that office one at a time and read the Riot Act to them, that's what he needs to done, but he hasn't done it. That's how it works in Washington. And this namby-pamby way of getting up and being a nice guy is not working. It is not. He needs to pull the old Tip O'Neill deal. He needs to pull the old LBJ deal and get these people in his office and remind them that they're Democrats, by God, and that he helped get a lot of them elected, and they'd better toe the line. That's what he needs to do. He needs to play some hardcore politics with his own party. All the Republicans aren't going along with him on anything. Why doesn't he at least get his own group together? I'm flummoxed by that. I really am. It's hard for me to think that the president doesn't have the wherewithal to do that. But it's also so hard for me to think that he does have the wherewithal to do that. And for some unknown reason, unknown to me, it's just sitting back and letting things flow whichever way they will go. And that's not what I expected from this president. I thought he'd be a lot tougher than that. And on that, I am terribly disappointed. I know no president's going to be perfect, and as I've often said on this show, the only politicians I agree with 100% is me. The only person I agree with 100% politically is me. Well, I was a politician, so I can go ahead and say that. But I'm really disappointed. I think so far this White House, if I had to grade them on a 1 to 10, I'd give them about a 3. Now, mind you, George Bush was down around a 1. But I just don't think... I don't know. I don't know if he doesn't have... Maybe he doesn't have the will to do it. Maybe the special interests are affecting him more than I think they are. I don't know. I know certainly the Wall Street people are affecting him. I hate the fact that he's... I suppose you all read about that big deal he's going to... Where is it? Sometime this week, big fundraiser in New York City. To the Wall Street types. Shouldn't go near those people. Shouldn't be seen with them. I know he's got the toughest job in the world. He's probably got the toughest job that any president has had coming into office for forever, perhaps. I don't think anybody's ever inherited a worse mess than he inherited. And I know he can't do anything with the Republicans, but I sure as hell expected him to ride herd on the Democrats, and he hasn't done that. Until he does that, he's not going to enjoy hardly any success in Washington. Well, we're coming up toward the top of the hour for... news, and I think we'll pause for news right now. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network, and we will be back right after the news.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Senator Max Baucus says his Senate Finance Committee health care reform bill expands coverage, improves quality, lowers costs, and makes sure that people won't be bankrupted by medical bills. He says he's working now with Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid and Senator Chris Dodd on merging his committee's bill with the Senate Health Committees.
The real reform is in health care delivery system reform. The real reform is in putting the kibosh, frankly, on the insurance industry practices, which deny coverage based on pre-existing condition and health status.
Baucus says the public option idea is still alive, but he's not sure there are 60 votes in the Senate to pass it.
I want any mechanism which keeps the health insurance industry feet to the fire as control costs and keep them adhering to the reforms that were put in the bill and increases competition. There are various versions of public option being bandied about. Long and short of it is this issue is alive, and we're looking at it. We're trying to see what makes the most sense.
One of the country's largest newspapers is laying off roughly 8% of the newsroom. Jesse Russell reports.
The New York Times will be slashing 100 newsroom jobs by the end of the year. The paper announced on Monday that it would offer buyouts to employees in an effort to avoid layoffs. The Times is offering the buyout to both union and non-union workers, who have 45 days to decide if they will accept. The Times employs nearly 1,250 in the newsroom, and the job cuts amount to roughly 8% of staff. In a letter, Executive Director Bill Keller wrote that he yearns for the day when we can do our jobs without looking over our shoulders for economic thunderstorms.
Non-union city workers in Chicago will be ordered to take 24 furlough days next year by Mayor Richard Daley. According to the Chicago Tribune, the mayor will also deny workers cost of living increases. His office estimates the measures will save the city $26 million. The mayor is making a suggestion in his 2010 budget proposal, which goes before the city council on Wednesday. Chicago is facing a deficit of $500 million. Jesse Russell has today's economic report.
A new study reports that nearly half of New York City's workforce doesn't have sick leave. The study by the Community Service Society of New York says 7 in 10 low-income workers reported that they went to work sick in the last year, and 3 in 10 sent sick children to school. The number of three-person households that earn less than $36,000 who receive sick pay has dropped substantially since 2007. That year, 56% had sick leave, and in 2009, only 33% receive it.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life, you hear me? Give my creation life.
So this was fun.
You're gonna like me.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. Six. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody. Man, oh man, here we are down to the end of October already. Fascinating how fast the time goes. Hey, I do want to remind everybody once again, as I mentioned earlier in the program, what I do with my note here. that Bob Kincaid and myself are going to descend upon Washington again next week or so. So look out, everybody. Here we come. We're going to go to the Building Making It in America Economy, the Institute for America's Future Conference, coming up Thursday, October 29th. They've invited us, Bob and I, to come and cover that event, and we will do so. We will bring the whole thing. It's going to be a great event to listen to, let me tell you, because they're going to have some fine speakers. We're going to have the new president of the AFL-CIO. We're going to talk. Let me see who else they got on here. Bob Borsage is going to talk. We've got Sherrod Brown's going to be there. Who else? Harold Meyerson, the columnist for the Washington Post. A big long lineup of people that are going to be their panelists and all, and it will be, I promise you, something interesting. And it's always interesting when Bob and I go to Washington. We'll make news somehow, I promise you. All right. Hey, thanks for tuning in today. It's good to have all of you along with us here. I've been airing some of my gripes that have been building up for a long, long time, and I know many of you have the same concerns that I do. Millions of people do. And one of the big concerns right now, and I know many of you have been following this closely, and I have as well, and it seems to be playing out oh so slowly. I think we know that the president is seriously considering putting 40,000 or so soldiers in Afghanistan, maybe even more than that. And I think, I'm not the president, mind you, but I think the very thought of that the fact is even considering that is an abomination. I don't know how many thinking people can actually come up with an argument of what we've got to gain from this. I just don't know what we've got to gain from this. What? You know, there's that old line coming up again that, oh, we've got to send troops in there, the whole region will collapse. How many times have we heard that? Did the whole region around Vietnam collapse after we walked out of there or were run out of there? Did it? Of course not. We're talking about a caveman country here. I mean, God bless the Afghanis, but we are talking about caveman country and a culture that is so far away from the modern world it's not even within sight. And we have got absolutely nothing to gain in that hellhole of a country, and everyone knows it. It is another Vietnam. Oh, we won't have the same amount of casualties that we had in Vietnam, because we fight different kinds of wars today. There aren't the casualty numbers, therefore the American people aren't as upset as they were during Vietnam. There isn't a draft now, so young people aren't being yanked out of their homes and being sent to a foreign war for no goddamn reason at all. No, these are people who have volunteered, we're constantly reminded. Never mind that they're volunteered, so many of them, because they can't find a job and they're so poor they don't know what else to do except join the military. Many, many, many people are in the military right now because they couldn't find a job and they're poor. Another example of the working poor. Only these people face getting a bullet in their body. We have nothing to gain in that country. You know it. I know it. Everyone knows we've got nothing to gain in that country. There are people who do have something to gain there. Oh, yeah. We've got people that have a reason to be there. We've been there for, what, nearly 8 years already? No progress at all. None. Our military will admit that. Our political leaders will admit there hasn't been one bit of progress in that country. Here we finally have an election, and Karzai's there. See, John Kerry's over there kibitzing with Karzai today, and we haven't made any progress. The election they had was the election they had was more ridiculous than the some of these Banana Republic elections. They've got leadership that's as corrupt as any on this planet Earth, including Karzai and his family. They have no economy. They have no infrastructure. They have no real national cohesiveness at all. In fact, most Afghanis don't even think of the entire place as a country at all, but rather some sort of a loose-knit bunch of provinces or tribes. That's how the average Afghani person thinks about it. And it is true that the average Afghani man is stoned all day long by chewing some sort of residue from the poppies. And they're loyal to whomever provides them with guns and money. And we, the United States of America, are going to change centuries and centuries of corruption, graft, and Stone Age thinking? Not likely, my friends. Not likely. It would be impossible without taking over the entire population and pumping in hundreds of billions of dollars that we don't have. That's the galling part of this. Hell, we can't take proper care of our own people, and we're thinking of building a nation in Afghanistan? Come on, President Obama. Wake up. You can do better than that. The question is, do you have the will to do the right thing, or are you going to be like decades of politicians before you and march to the orders of the military-industrial community? And shamefully right now, it kind of looks like that's the course we're on. And I'll tell you something else. I am disappointed and have been from the very beginning with President Obama and some of his choices for high office and advisors. This Tim Geithner deal, he was a horrible choice for Treasury. A horrible choice. He's a direct pipeline to Wall Street, and he has been protecting his fat cat friend's asses ever since he took the job. Said he didn't know about these bonuses. Oh, yeah, right. Didn't know about it. This was all set up by the power brokers, Goldman Sachs, put another one of their own in the top job so they could continue on with that plan of siphoning more money from the U.S. Treasury and the American public. I really believe that such people should be banned from the U.S. government. They should be banned from holding any kind of public office at all. What was Obama thinking by putting that man in the Treasury? What is he thinking by keeping Bernanke? And we're going to talk a little bit more about that later on in the program, this cabal from Goldman Sachs that seems to be running things. Man, there's a lot to talk about, isn't there? And I guess I've gone on and on and on today. I've mentioned quite a few of my gripes about America. Only because I do love her. Probably enough gripes to last you for a while, but there's one more thing that I find absolutely reprehensible about our country that I simply have to talk about. And this involves quite a few people, and evidently quite a lot more on the political right than on the left, and evidently more people in the South than any place else. And I'm talking about racism and bigotry. I grew up believing this was, in fact, absolutely the land of opportunity for everyone. The so-called melting pot of the world where the Statue of Liberty stands in New York Harbor welcoming those from other countries to our shores. Black, brown, yellow, white, give us your poor, your tired. You know, I honestly believe that we Americans should welcome anyone who wanted to come here and live and prosper and raise a family with dignity just like any of the rest of us. I honestly believe that when I was a kid, that that's what this country, this whole country, wanted. And since then, that belief has totally disappeared. I've seen the ugliness of segregation firsthand in the South. Firsthand. And I've witnessed many incidents of it in the North as well. And it happens almost everywhere, and it's ugly. It's really ugly. And it's as wrong can be. Maybe like some of you, I've known people who went to church every Sunday morning praying to the Lord and then talking about those damn niggers at Sunday dinner. I've seen rich and poor alike taking advantage of people of color. And this American trait has reared its ugly head in a major way since our president stepped on the national stage and announced his run for the Oval Office. I was so proud that I had lived in a nation that would finally accept someone besides an old white guy as their president. What a chance to show the rest of the world that as a nation we've finally grown away from the hatred and racism. But man, I was wrong. Oh, I was wrong. It's only made things worse. Those hate mongers on the right they've given rise to a new wave of the worst kind of racism, and it's making the divide in our nation much wider than it was before. It's an abomination against all that is good for this country to exist and proliferate as it is right now. We have not grown, and we are regressing back to the days when white was right, and when people were proud to ride horses at night with hoods and torches and set crosses on fire to show their hatred for anyone that wasn't white and Christian. And it's time to face it. If federal laws didn't exist to hold down this kind of evil there, we'd be seeing lynchings and torture like in the good old days of the South. We would. And we've shown ourselves to be religious persecutors as well. If you're white and you're Christian, you're okay. But if you worship at a mosque, a temple, a synagogue, a shrine, anything but a Christian church, you should be looking over your shoulder because you're being watched and you're being discriminated against. America doesn't like you. America fears you because you're different. And I don't care if you worship Jesus, Muhammad, Buddha, Confucius, Shiva, Yahweh, Bugs Bunny, or Santa Claus. You can do it with my blessing because it's your belief and it's none of my business. In fact, if you don't worship at all, or if you don't have any religious beliefs whatsoever, it's none of my damn business or anyone else's. But in America these days, you better be praying to the right God or you're going to be watched and you're going to be feared and you will be persecuted one time or another. You got to be white and you got to be Christian. Friends, something has to give. And it has to give soon. We can no longer sit back and allow our country to be thrown to the dogs as it has been these past 20 years or so. The Republican neocons have to get hold of the crazy radical haters on this side and calm things down. And the Democrats have to grow a spine and stand for what's right once again. And we've got to get the money, the filthy money out of politics, or as a nation, we're absolutely doomed to live under a government run by huge corporations whose lust for greed and power don't know any bounds whatsoever. We've got to stop it now, or soon there'll be no turning back. It's your fault. It's my fault. It's the fault of all of us. And if we continue to sit by and allow this to happen, it's going to be fatal to our nation. There is no question in my mind. Just like the days of the Vietnam protests, there ought to be hundreds of thousands of people hitting the streets in Washington every damn week to protest the direction this nation has taken. We need to put fear in every one of our elected officials to stand by the oath of office that they swore. It's now or never. And that might sound trite to somebody, but I believe it's absolutely true, and I think there's every sign in the world of it out there. And if we don't take it seriously, we're going to be in a terrible, terrible mess. We're going to pause for a break. I'll be back in a couple of minutes, and we'll take phone calls.
Perfect day. The sun is so bright. As evening falls, the gentle breeze is blowing. The time we shared went by so fast, just like a dream. But I'd do it all again if I could somehow. I must be leaving soon. It's your world now. It's your world now. My racing's world.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Ben Fischel. Continuing his Fox News-assisted witch hunt of the Obama administration, Glenn Beck has a new beef, now attacking the administration for their evil plot to promote volunteerism. Seriously.
Well, this is fantastic. It's almost like we're living in Mao's China right now. First Green Week and now Service Week. Soon we could have 52 weeks of the White House just writing scripts and tell us what we should all do.
If Beck thinks promoting volunteerism is a shadowy presidential conspiracy, is it any wonder why more and more people agree that Fox News is a 24/7 political operation aimed at destroying the Obama presidency?
Democrats have finally had enough with Fox being a political operation, not a news network.
They're not really a news station if you watch. Even, it's not just their commentators.
It's really morphed itself this year into a 24/7 political operation with a very specific goal.
For these stories and more, visit MediaMatters.org.
This and that word about our favorite Glenn Beck comes from Media Matters, courtesy of Media Matters Today. Thank you, Ben Fischel, over at Media Matters. You folks perform a great public service, and I read Media Matters every day, and so should you. Got a note from a cyber friend of mine. Said a question came to mind while watching the news about how the muckety mucks at banks and other financial services are living even larger, while the rest of us are struggling. And even after these institutions have taken huge taxpayer bailouts, have we become a nation of whipped puppies? Are we suffering from a collective cause of learned helplessness? We are being subjected to so many indignities, rip-offs, and other abuses. If we were a nation of manly men and strong women, the bastards could not get away with this crap. Nowadays, we have become such a nation of wimps that the powerful and their minions don't have to worry about regulation or even public opinion. You don't like the fact that my mega bank refuses to give you a mortgage while I buy my $7 million home? Tough. Do something about it, sucker. You want affordable health care insurance? Yeah, right. And we'll give you a free pony, too. You don't. Let me go on here. You don't want to work for 50 cents an hour? Go take your old job, and that's now in China. It was bad enough when the GOP mafia was in charge. At least the outrages and abuses of the public were comprehensible. But now that we're almost a year into the change you can believe in, it is especially disheartening. Even with the Obama administration and the Democratic Congress, and there's still a feeling that no one on our side, no one is on our side in the way that counts. And worse yet, we as a nation keep putting up with it. We feel helpless because of, as individuals, we can't change it. And movements, we can't get the politicians to take us serious. And in terms of shame, well, there is no more shame. So we become whip puppies, accepting the unacceptable because there seems to be no choice. That's from Armstead, a friend of mine. He's absolutely right. It's what this whole show has been about today. I should have titled it Whip Puppies. Should have titled it Shame. And he's so right. The rich have stolen the economy. Absolutely stolen it. I'm one of the founding members of an organization of a website called AmpedStatus.com. That's AmpedStatus.com. And I hope you'll check that website out. I think you'll find it very, very good. AmpedStatus.com. And there's an article on there right now that is written by David DeGraw. He from AmpedStatus. He is just a great writer, a good news man, and a terrific writer. And he wrote a story about the economic death squad. And it's about the Goldman Sachs problem that I was telling you about earlier. The record payday for Wall Street Goldman Sachs, and I'm going to read it to you. It's a little bit lengthy, but I think you'll enjoy hearing this. Record payday for Wall Street Goldman Sachs 2009 bonuses could buy insurance for 1.7 million families. Paraphrasing a very insightful quote, the amount of poverty and suffering required for the emergence of a Goldman Sachs and the amount of depravity that the accumulation of a fortune of such magnitude entails is left out of the mainstream media, and it is not always possible to make the people in general see this. The American middle class, once the only effective counterweight to Wall Street, greed, has been decimated. Over 25 million people in what was the U.S. middle class are now in full-blown crisis mode and urgently need to increase their income. Over 25 million people in crisis mode. Every 7 seconds, another American family is kicked out of their home. We're confronted by a lost generation of young workers who cannot find jobs. Despite all the talk of health care reform, there is no meaningful reform coming for years, if at all, while right now over 45,000 Americans will die preventable deaths this year, and bankruptcies continue to skyrocket due to the cost of medical bills. Millions upon millions of uninsured, unemployed, and underemployed, stressed out and sick people fight through every day and urgently need to get some justice. And while this is happening, the Wall Street fat cats are reaping billions in bonuses and profits, billions in bonuses and profits that they obtain from using taxpayer money, our money. Billions in profits that they are allowed to get away with because their puppets are running the government and making up the rules of this rigged game. Their profits and the cost of the government taxpayer bailout, the amount of depravity that the accumulation of a fortune of such a magnitude entails, is almost impossible to get the average citizen to truly comprehend. Trillions of dollars is not something that people have had experience with. It is an absolutely huge amount that is almost beyond common comprehension. However, a revealing new survey suggests that an outraged significant majority is coming to the realization that an organized financial cartel has taken over the government and robbed the U.S. public blind. 75% agree that while taxpayers are still suffering under the economic crisis, the big banks are back to business as usual after their bailouts, ignoring their commitments to help taxpayers and are helping themselves instead, making tens of billions of profits on the backs of the American taxpayers. 75% of the people agreed to that statement. 72% agree that it's outrageous that after taking trillions of our tax dollars in bailout money, the big banks are now spending millions to lobby against reforms that would protect us from their abuses in the future. These numbers clearly prove that there's an awareness and ever-growing outrage toward Wall Street, and rightfully so, but just throwing out the term Wall Street or big banks is far too vague and too wide a target. We need to focus our strategy on the small group of men who carried out the financial coup. These 13 men played leading roles in the first crashing of the economy, and then stealing trillions in taxpayers' funds. Some of them are now calling the shots and running the government to ensure that their obscene profits keep pouring into their coffers. Know our enemies. Meet the Wall Street Economic Death Squad. Hank Paulson, Tim Geithner, Ben Bernanke, Robert Rubin, Larry Summers, Alan Greenspan, Lloyd Blankfein, Jamie Dimon, John Mack, Vikram Pandit, John Thane, Hank Greenberg, and Ken Lewis. These men presided over the largest transfer of wealth in history, from the working class to the flamboyant super rich. What these men have done is obscene. After crashing the economy, trillions, literally trillions of dollars have been funneled into the pockets of a select few in secrecy, while billions of people suffer in poverty. Billions suffer to survive. This small, tight-knit Wall Street cadre has committed a crime against humanity. And on a personal level, think about how much money is taken from your paycheck each week in taxes, if you still have a paycheck. How many of your hard-earned thousands of dollars went away from you and your family and into the pockets of Goldman Sachs via your taxes? Think about that. Billionaires. Billionaires took your money. Then think about the fact that your paycheck should be significantly higher, as it would be if CEOs weren't taking an astonishing record of $500 for every $1 you make. Due to unregulated greed, the U.S. now has the highest inequality of wealth in the industrialized world. No other country is even close. Every time you skip a trip to the doctor, to the dentist, to the food store, even to a social event that could bring you a little stress relief, you should think about these thieves on Wall Street. Every time you skip something that you need, think about the billionaires on Wall Street, because they have your money. The facts are that $30,000 per person is unaccounted for. That's $30,000 for every man, woman, and child in the U.S., which means if you have a family of five, your family has lost $150,000 to Goldman Sachs. Now, while you stress out and struggle, they have your money, and it's sitting in their banks, sitting in their vaults, flipping in their markets, collecting interest and dust, just spinning in their coffers as they live lavish lifestyles while you struggle and stress. Every time you get a bill and feel that stress, every time you make cutbacks to make ends hopefully meet, every time you make an interest payment or rates rise on your credit cards, house, car, student loans, bills, 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 every time you feel that stress, you should think of these thieves on Wall Street. They have your money, and they're playing you for a sucker. What are you holding off on? What are you depriving yourself of? Can you afford to get gas for your car? Can you not afford a car? Can you not afford your rent? Can you not afford to own a house? Can you not afford to have a child? Can you not afford to have medical care? Can you not afford to turn your heat on? Can you not afford to pay your electric bill? Can you not afford a second meal today? These are all basic things that every person should be able to easily afford in a technologically advanced society such as ours. The reason you can't afford some of these things is because the financial elite who control the economy have robbed us all. They have launched a war on us and declared us the enemy. We are a population of people that they have been focused on eliminating. This is a deadly serious issue we are facing here. It is the unfortunate reality of our current crisis. The sooner you recognize this and confront it, the better chance we have for real change. Economic justice can still be obtained. So know your enemies. Hank Paulson, Tim Geithner, Ben Bernanke, Robert Rubin, Larry Summers, Alan Greenspan, Lloyd Blankenfein, Jamie Dimon, John Mack, Vikram Pandit, John Thank, Hank Greenberg, and Ken Lewis. The Economic Death Squad. Let's hold these 13 men personally accountable. They control trillions of our dollars. Let's demand that they use that money, our money, for purposes that will give every one of us the basic human rights we deserve. Do you hear me? Do you? That from David DeGraw of AmpedStatus.com. Please do check out the website, AmpedStatus, AmpedStatus.com. We are going to pause for a break, I think. And we'll be back in just a moment or two.
A one, two, three, four.
have been poisoned by these fairy tales. Lawyers dwell on small details. They had to fly. Oh, and I know a place where we can go. Still untouched by wind. Oh, we could sit and watch the clouds roll by. Tall grass, waves, and wind. Oh, you can lay your hair back on the ground. Let your hair fall all around you. Offer up your best defense. Oh, this is the end. Oh, this is the end of the innocent.
I think the end of innocence is, in fact, over. What do you think? Been gone a while now, I believe. 866-546-5254, if you'd like to give us a call here at the studio today. 866-546-5254, whatever's on your mind. Yes, Bob and I are going to descend upon Washington, D.C. for that conference next Thursday. We will go Wednesday and get the equipment set up and then cover the entire conference and then return home bright and early Friday morning. Bright and early Friday morning. They are what did I do with my list here? Someone's asking what the topic of the conference here is being put on for. Good folks at the Campaign for America's Future. They usually do a great job on all these events. What I do with my list? Man, I tell you, I'm getting, I'm so disorganized today. I don't want to say anything about the conference that isn't absolutely, positively 100% fact here. So I'm looking through my notes and not having any luck. I'll get it for you here in just a second. What did I do with that? 866-546-5254, if you'd like to join us here at the program. Yeah, we're going to be talking about, you know, doing things in America again, building the economy, building the new economy, because we're not going to be able to go back and do things the way we did them before. That's what the economy is all about, building the economy, making it in America. We talked a good bit about this at the last conference that we were at in Pittsburgh. And we've got to go back to the point where we can get some jobs again. But we can't go back. It's my opinion. We can never go back to where we were. The jobs are pretty much gone and all that. So we're going to be staying around where we are for a while here. Let me see if we can get somebody on the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey guy, it's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hi, Kevin.
Yeah, how you been? Missed you, man.
Well, been all right. Been missing this, but if you heard, you heard the opening of the program, you know why. So.
Yeah, I understand. I trust me, it's like that old Cheech and Chong movie. Things are tough all over, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could stand to watch a good Cheech and Chong movie right now. I need a little comedy. Does anybody know whether on TV? I know we have the comedy channel, but I wish there was one of these movie channels that had nothing but comedy on it. I would sit down and watch it once a day just to boost my spirits a little bit. I love a good laugh.
Oh yeah. Laughter is usually the best medicine.
Yeah.
You hit on a whole lot of tough subjects today. And I don't know if you heard the show that Bob and I did where I told him that I'm pretty much going to be leaving the country, hopefully by spring of 2010.
No, I did not, Kevin.
Yeah, I do plan on teaching overseas in the Czech Republic.
Oh, man. I've always wanted to visit Prague. I have a friend that lives there, and I am constantly being told what a wonderful city it is, he's a Czech native.
Yeah, it is. I've never been there, but I have friends that have lived there as teachers, and I decided to take my TOEFL certification and teach English as a second language over there.
Oh, wow. Great. Yeah. That'll be quite an adventure. You're young yet, and that'll be a tremendous adventure for you. Wow, I envy you.
Thank you. Thank you. I don't mean to rub it in, but...
No, are you going to be in Prague?
Yes, most likely. Oh, that's what I'm gunning for.
You know, I've heard so many people say that, you know, they go to Europe and visit, and they go to Paris, and they go to London, and, you know, they go to all these cities, they go to Rome and all that, and they arrive in Prague, finally, at the end of their trip for a day, and say, oh, my God, I wish I'd started here. I would have stayed here the entire time. They love Prague.
Yeah. Well, from what I've heard, a lot of my friends say it looks like a very clean Brooklyn with castles and a river cut through it.
A clean Brooklyn with castles and a river. That's pretty good. This friend of mine, he and another guy, they've got a restaurant right on the river.
Yeah.
Oh my. Well, I all my best to you on that. I hope you enjoy that. I know you will.
Yeah. Well, you'll be hearing from me because it's still months in the States. I'm currently doing the course right now, and you know, so it's just a case of once I finish, which will be the weekend before Thanksgiving, and then of course I'm going to stay the holidays here. And then, you know, but like around, hopefully by February to the latest springtime.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'll be overseas. Mm. But I'll try and remain in touch while I'm there.
Oh, yeah.
Photos on my Facebook and all that.
Oh, yeah, you have to. You're ordered to.
It's just a case I've given up. I've given up on the country. I can't say that I'm disappointed in Obama because the reality is, I just think he's trying to stay alive.
Yeah, maybe so.
And he could, and you know, it's like that, you know, how do you boil a frog?
Yeah.
You know, you put it in cold water and then you turn the heat on.
Right.
Scenario.
That's right. I think that's because what's happening to the American public right now.
Yeah. It's like you cannot just come in, because first of all, the thing is, like you touched on before, the racism in this country will not allow him to exercise power, blatantly exercise power.
I think you're right. It's honestly, I wasn't kidding when I talked about that. I really did think that we'd made a lot more progress than I now realize we have.
I didn't think so from the beginning. Bush has just so traumatized everyone that even a black man can become president.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there is that.
I was a bit more cynical from the beginning. Believe you me, I was happy he won. And, you know, that's just another barrier we've broken.
Yes.
Okay. But I'm cynical in the sense that for people of color, those who make it, it's the exception to the rule and not the rule.
Yeah.
And until we get to the point where why shouldn't we be making it kind of scenario, then I will always be a cynical in a lot of things when it comes to people of a color achieving something in this country.
Well, I'm a natural-born cynic. My friends would all tell you that. It's not easy for me to trust. It's not easy for me to take anybody at their word until I work with them a while and learn, you know, until my mind's eye says, okay, you can trust. But I'm a born cynic. I am. But I'm a little bit ashamed that I naivete came upon me, because I really did, the last 10 years, I really did believe we'd made more progress on racism than we have, that I've discovered.
No, because you'll always have that element who feels a black man should not be in charge of me, regardless if it's for your benefit. You know, and I've seen that in the day-to-day working in an office. I have a colleague who's a supervisor of the department, and when it comes to coming to work on time, his thing is, I don't mind if you come to work late, but give me 35 hours a week. And almost once a week, he had on going into human resources saying he's abusing his power. Because we all know, you know, and he's reasonable. It's like, we all know you have lives and you have children, and some of you live way outside the city where you have to commute in. All I ask, if you come in at 10, you work until 6 or 7.
Sure.
You don't come in at 10 and leave at 4.
That's right. That's reasonable.
It's a 35-hour work week.
My dad always told me he had a sign hanging behind his desk that said, if you never do any more than you get paid for, you never get paid for any more than you do. And he used to tell me when I was a little kid, guy, if you don't do what it is you're supposed to do and work the hours you're supposed to work for somebody and work during that time, you're stealing from them. And he invoked that in me, and I do believe that. I do. Hey, you know what, Kevin? I'm down to the wire here.
Okay, brother. We'll talk again.
Call again soon. Good to hear from you, and I'm pleased at your news. I am.
Okay, thanks a lot, and okay, I'll talk to you soon, bro.
All right, bye now. Our friend Kevin. Well, that's exciting news. That is exciting news. I hear that Prague is more than a wonderful city. It's absolutely scenic and fresh and clean and friendly, so I look forward to that. I know I have a friend that lived there during the tough times, during the tough regime, and actually had to escape out of there, but wonderful. Well, hey, you're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. And it was a pleasure being with you today. I do want to remind you that the program is a public supported, and without your support, we couldn't even air this show today. And as you know, we don't have advertisers or sponsors on this program, and without public funding, we could not give you the quality of informative, inspiring, and knowledgeable program that